Hello. Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club or common reading program for geek culture. Each episode, we have a topic that four people will discuss in their own geeky perspectives. Joining me this episode are...
Me. It's going to be me, Austin. I'm back, bitches. I'm going to be talking about Destiny today.
Now, it's Colin. I'm back as well. I'm going to be talking a little bit about something called Star Trek. It's this little indie movie, specifically by this poorly known director named J.J. Abrams and his buddy Justin Lin. You probably haven't heard of them either.
Nah, not at all.
Hello, my name is Taimul Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer, and my domain will be The Chronicles of Narnia.
And I'm your host, Keenan Kodish. For this episode, I've selected the topic of fables, specifically the first volume, which is 1 through 5 issues, that is. And we're going to be talking about reimaginings. For those of you who don't know, Fables is a comic published by Vertigo, which is part of DC Comics. It began printing in 2002, but has since concluded with 150 issues. Fables is about childhood fairy tale folklore characters. The fables, who include such notables as the Big Bad Wolf and Snow White, had their homeland overtaken by a mysterious villain known as the Adversary. Many of the fables were able to escape into our world, New York City to be exact. Though they live secretly among us, the fables must continually deal with the drama of their lost home and the political instability of their new home, Fabletown, which is what they call their kind of secret society. It's in this nice apartment.
Man, when you call it a secret society, it sounds way shadier than it is.
Oh, no, they're just living there.
It's an apartment building with a bunch of nice people.
Yeah.
But it really sounds...
No, time out. It's not a bunch of nice people.
I would not call them nice people at all.
Whoa. Are you saying...
They're fucking shady as shit.
Well,
their
amnesty
agreement's bullshit.
Well, it's not.
Most of them should probably be dead.
Makes sense. Amnesty agreement makes sense. I'm sorry. Except way later, when I have problems. So the first 5 issues is the first story arc, and that is actually a murder mystery, which is about who killed Rose Red.
Dun-dun.
So for those of you who don't know, Rose Red was an original name for Snow White in the Snow White fairy tales. It kind of was like interchangeable depending on where you heard the story. It was either about a girl named Rose Red or it was about a girl named Snow White. So what Bill Willingham did, and that's the author of Fables did, is he made them twin sisters. And Rose Red is like this rambunctious partier, while Snow White is this more like prim and proper.
How dare he take liberties when taking beloved characters and turning them into his own? That's just rude to the source material. I don't like reimaginings. This podcast is stupid.
So the first, like I said, the first story arc centers around her apparent murder. And it's all about Bigby Wolf, who is the big bad wolf, who is the sheriff of Fabletown. He's just like chains.
Oh, that's why I call him that.
Yeah, I hate you. Yes, it's actually one of my favorite clever reimagined names. And he's like this chain-smoking detective, and he's kind of like a cool sidekick, not really. So it's all about the investigation into her death, of which Snow White, who is the deputy mayor of Fabletown, is also assisting him, but she's also like all personally involved because I don't know, her like twin sister was murdered. So I guess that's something people care about.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that makes Snow White a fake bitch, though. Because
what?
Snow White, like, she doesn't give a fuck about her sister until it's like, oh, she got murdered. Now I'm going to suddenly cry when, for the rest of my life, I've been shitting on her and her lifestyle choices.
Whoa, you don't even fucking know. Shut up.
I mean, she did kind of, like, take her husband, so...
Yeah, she did cheat with Prince Charming. But then again, Prince Charming's Prince Charming. For those of you who don't know in the story,
Prince Charming is a douche, yeah.
Yeah, from all those stories, you heard Prince Charming, and you know how he said, like, he's married to, like, Snow White, but also to, like, Cinderella? Well, that's because there's only one Prince Charming, and he's the worst.
You thought Scott Pilgrim was a fuckboy.
Yeah.
This is fuckboy 2.0.
Yes, Prince Charming literally has...
He's older than Scott Pilgrim. I'm going to put that one out there.
That's fair.
Yeah, he's a fuck man. Anyway... Prince Charming literally just, like, sleeps around for, like, room.
Charmingly.
Yeah, he just stays with the people who, like, he has sex with, because, like, because he can't afford anything, it turns out.
It's called banging for roof.
Yeah. Okay. In the first 5 minutes of reading, you already have met a bunch of different characters, such as the Frog Prince, who is a janitor now. You meet Beauty and Beast, who are still married. They have some, like, minor issues, but they're still, like, really cute.
They're in therapy.
Well, I mean...
talking to their mayor about their marital
deputy
problems.
Mayor.
Politics, am I right?
Yeah. Oh, and Jack of the Tales is also in it.
Yeah, he's a bean, little bean boy.
I mean, Keenan, I don't know that I hear all these stories about Jack.
I've heard at least 2 stories about Jack.
I have not. I'm not very engrossed in fairy tales.
Well, no. So like, we've got Jack and the Beanstalk, right? He's got those magic beans, and there's a cow in that story somewhere. Yeah. And then we got Jack and Jill, where he just is an idiot, and he falls down a hill and hurts himself.
Is that really a fairy tale, or is that just some bitch?
Then there's Jack be nimble, Jack be quick.
And then later in life, he has to hit the road. Because he's a shitty lover.
Oh, man, the breadth of fairy tales has just been blown wide open, yeah. Austin. It includes way more than I thought it would. Okay, let's see if we can keep moving before Keenan gets back and see how far we get. Let me see my notes. So, all right. So, Big B and Snow White are trying to solve the murder. But then they're talking to Bluebeard, who...
I don't know what the fuck that was about.
Accused Bluebeard of murdering Rose Red.
Who did they accuse?
Okay, can I ask... Bluebeard, we picked up where you left off, went through second issue.
Yeah, Bluebeard was a murderer for, like, hobby.
So, Rose Red dies, they arrest Jack, they accuse Bluebeard. You've got Bluebeard. Who is Bluebeard? Who's Bluebeard?
You mean, like, in this story or in general?
In general, I don't know the source material for him.
Well, basically the story goes, woman is courted by a rich man, but he's got this gross blue beard. Apparently. I don't know why it's blue. I guess he, like, chews a lot of, like, taffy or something. But, like, anyway.
Oh. Also, wasn't he like a pirate or a privateer who, like, bought his count ship or whatever it was?
Cool. And he has this gross blue beard. Woman sees past it. They get married. And then he, like, has this great big house, and he says, all right, you can go anywhere except this one room. And, of course, classic story, eventually she goes into the one room, and then she finds the skeletons of his ex-wives that were beheaded.
Maybe it's just a metaphor for his past demons.
I guess so. I think it's...
No, I think he's the demons.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, that was it. I just didn't know.
He murdered them.
So, yeah, they accuse Bluebeard...
Because his MO is murdering his wife, so, you know.
Yes, reasonable.
But basically, there's a lot of twists and turns, and I don't want to super spoil it for anybody. But we actually find the murderer, we find exactly what happened, and it all comes down in a classic parlor scene, which is very funny, because Big B's like, I get to do a parlor scene! He's all excited about it. For those of you who don't know, parlor scene is basically that typical end of a detective novel where they're all happen to be in the parlor, and he's like, I know who did it, and then he, like, reviews all the evidence and then points the person out.
I suppose you're wondering why I've called you all here tonight.
Yeah.
And what, Keenan, what is revealed in this parlor scene?
Oh, are we actually going to say it?
Oh, no, I mean, I guess we don't really have to. I guess that's not really the point of this, because we're talking about the idea of how it's...
Reimagining.
Yeah. Yeah, they just take a lot of public domain folklore characters and just, frankly, turn them on their heads in some scenarios. Because we got Big B Wolf, who's known as being a villain, the Big Bad Wolf, in many different stories, is actually our protagonist. And is the sheriff of this small underground community just trying to keep them from killing each other. Snow White, who we know as a damsel in distress, is actually the deputy mayor. And she's basically running the shit because the mayor, King Cole's like this useless guy who's all like, oh, but what about the money?
I have a question.
Yes.
There's a video game adaptation by Telltale called The Wolf Among Us.
Wolf Among Us.
And it's a prequel, right?
Yes, it is a canon prequel to the series. So if you played this game, you actually are a bit ahead of the game with some of the stuff. And it actually is really cool because much, much later in, I think, I want to say issue like, I don't know, 9 maybe? No, before that. I want to say like 8. It references those actions exactly.
Oh, cool. Okay, yeah. Well, the main thing
those events.
I wanted to ask is, well, I haven't, I played the game before I read the comics, and now I forgot my question. Shit.
Amazing. I mean,
yeah. Well, okay, Keenan, what were you talking about before I mentioned?
I was just going through some characters that we meet that are reimagined. Pinocchio isn't like this charming boy anymore. He's still charming, I would say, but he's now this kind of
boy.
Yeah, he's an angry 14-year-old with the spirit of a 100-year-old man. He just really wants to have sex,
and like super just cranky about everything.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would too.
I don't blame him. Just, super grumpy.
Yep. We also meet Colin Pig. And Colin Pig, just for those of you who are interested, Colin Pig is one of the three little pigs who has escaped from the farm. The farm is the other half of the Fabletown residence. It is for non-human fables that can't go about either glamoured, which is like a magic spell that makes you look human.
Keenan, that was way too in depth. We're gonna be here for an eternity if you keep going.
And basically, if you can't do that, and like you're a talking pig, you go live on the farm. So that way, human Mundies is what they call us, the mundane people. Don't flip out when you know a talking walrus with sunglasses goes, "I'm a walrus," and you're like, "Ah." but that being said, I think it's about time we move on. Let's move on to some of our reps and talk about how reimaginings affect their sort of domain. Let's begin with our first rep, Austin.
Oh, shit. I am first. Okay. I'm repping Destiny, which, as you wouldn't know from the title, but you might know from some news in gaming in the past couple years, is a science fiction title released by Bungie that's pretty much about sort of this post-apocalyptic space age land, which is pretty interesting. You'd think it would have a nice story, but it doesn't. except, I mean, the base game is just absolute bullshit.
Oh my god. I'm taking one of my friends through that story for the first time, and we got to the end of that scene, and she's like, "What the fuck was that bullshit?" And I'm like, the rest of the game is just as good.
I've seen like walkthroughs where like one of the characters is like, "I could tell you all about this amazing world, but I won't."
That's it. That's it. Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I could tell you about the moon and I could tell you about the giant space stuff, but I've already spent too much time walking down these stairs, so I can't tell you.
Yeah. But anyway, in the most recent expansion released last December, November?
It was September. Rise
it was
of Iron.
September. Okay. Well, I was in school.
Get on your shit, Austin.
Yeah, crazy. Anyway, so in this expansion, Rise of Iron, they delve into some of the backstory of the world, and they talk about how after this huge apocalyptic event happened on the Earth, that there were some people who rose up amongst the humans to become like knights of a sort, and they became the Lords of Iron. And if you read through the different pieces of lore that you find not in the game but in your phone app,
oh good. Why would I want them in my
great
game
like that? No, but you, well, I mean, you can find some evidence of like these different characters and stuff in the game, but the point is that it sort of becomes a retelling or reimagining of Arthurian legend and stuff, and it's really cool. Like, they've got the like, it's sort of a parallel to King Arthur trying to unite all of that one shitty island. It would be this guy named Radagast, who was, like...
Radagast.
Yeah, he ran around with a sword and...
So, what? Like, do we have Merlin in space?
Kind of.
Austin. Austin, I demand you edit in a very long pause after that to make it just super fucking awkward.
I asked that you don't.
Austin,
make,
is
don't,
there a Mordred?
I asked that you don't put the pause in there, you know?
I mean, we're going to see what we're going to see. But the thing is that for Merlin specifically, I think that they've split the character of Merlin into two or three individuals among the Lords of Iron. Because they, like, with the little characterization that they are able to do, they want to expand the lore of the game such that they have, like, several people serving, like, very specific roles within the within Wait, the
is is
the
that person iron. Split into Saladin and
what about a Lancelot? Is there a Lancelot?
No, no.
That,
I would okay. Merlin. I would say is actually split between the three warlocks.
No shit. Okay. Weird.
Yeah. Crazy. This crazy dude Timur, who's like kind of. He's a little off his rocker, but he's like super. He knows a lot about the workings of the world and like space magic and shit. And then there's this other warlock named Felwinter, who is he's very cunning, and he guides the team in a sort of not quite as upfront way as many other people would.
His shotgun is overpowered as shit.
Not anymore, I think.
Yeah, no. When they nerfed Felwinter's lie, the shotgun was so powerful that they nerfed every shotgun in the game. Because that makes sense.
Yeah, and then the third character that they have is. Scory, and she's this
Scory.
Her artifact is dope,
kind of like a bard of sorts, but she's really the verbose and clever one.
Does she have a sitcom called Scory in the House?
Boom!
No.
Boom!
Anyway,
leave. Get out. Leave.
Yeah, but that's where your Space Merlin is. And I thought, Colin, did you say something else, or Keenan, or
was there a Lancelot type character? Because I feel like that's kind of essential.
That would be Saladin.
Well, either Saladin or potentially Yolder, honestly.
Well, it depends. Who flies into a random fury and like kills everyone around them.
That would be closer to Saladin. That's the thing about Yolder, is we don't really learn much about her. We get a cutscene that explains
that she
sacrificed herself, but we actually get characterization of Saladin.
No, yeah, but
especially with him leading the Iron Banner.
But we do get characterization of Yolder, one, through her relationship to Saladin in the cutscenes, which is like not very much, admittedly. But she's also in a number of the grimoire cards that you can collect in the game. Like, they talk about her. Mm-hmm. She's there.
I like how Destiny reimagined proper storytelling by instead
right?
of putting cutscenes in. They give you little
Lord.
Cards to read on your phone. 1,100 hours in that game, and I still don't know half of what's happening.
Oh, good. Why would you, like, want to, I don't know, see it or, you know, hear it in the game? Who does that anymore? That's fucking
All right.
stupid.
All right, cool. We got less than a minute left. Austin, you can button it up with whatever you need to try and close this up.
Oh, I mean, there are other things that I want to talk about. I just don't have very much time. There's a lot of pressure.
We have the summary. It's okay.
Okay. Anyway, so I think Yolder's more Lancelot because she's like
okay.
the one that they trust to like send out into a situation where one of the Iron Lords needs to duel another warlord existing in Old Russia, and Yolder's the one who they choose because they're like, yeah, she'll probably be the best. And then when she does, she says, you can tell the warlord that he can send two champions out because I want to make it interesting.
All right, I guess that's fair.
Yeah, well, that's good. I really like what you had to say. Cool.
Yay, cool.
Next, we will be talking to Colin. Colin, what do you got to say?
Do you guys know what Star Trek is?
No, I hear it's like some really bad, corny. There's a guy, he does karate chops, kisses black women. I don't really know what it's about.
Will Wheaton?
Is that right?
is that your summary? Okay, there are 741 canon installations of Star Trek, and your summary is Will Wheaton.
No, you missed the integral
okay. So, Star Trek.
Wait, this is Whoopi Goldberg's old show, right?
Yeah, actually, no. She begged to be on that show. Well, she probably asked. I don't think she begged.
Yeah, I think they begged her to be on it. I don't know.
No, she was super excited by Nichelle Nichols in the original series and inspired and was like, hey, can I be on the show? And they're like, we'd love to have you on the show.
Yeah, but, like, I'm pretty sure, like, it was her popularity in The Color Purple that, like, got her onto the show in the first place.
Ironically, never wore purple.
Oh, I'm sure. It was a mutually beneficial agreement. Symbiosis. Season 1, episode 22, featuring Merrick Buttrick. Anyway, so Star Trek...
Nerd.
Launched in 1966. It's just turned 50. Can't quite get the early bird special, but, you know, it's got some gray hairs. So Star Trek is a science fiction franchise based 200, 300, 400 years in the future, depending on where you are. And it's very optimistic about how things will turn out. It's saying we're going to solve all our problems and go to space and be great. And start the United States in space called the Federation.
Wait, can you just a moment? Can you just say, like, it's not just that we don't just solve all our problems. We extensively figure out so much extremely incomprehensible bullshit. We fix our system, like the systemic inequalities of the Earth, to such an extent that there's some guy who can apparently just, like, for shits and gigs, like, research into making androids, and then he just makes, like, an actually functioning human.
Okay,
android.
No, he didn't just research. That was that? Okay. In season 4 of Enterprise, Eric Soong starts that work. So it was over 2 generations, over 2.5 generations of people that would happen. It wasn't instantaneous. And he was a scientist. He was one of the foremost roboticists in his. I'm going to put the kibosh on this because I haven't even started my point yet. So the original Star Trek featured a couple characters. Captain Kirk by William Shatner.
Like, where does he get his grant money?
Shut the fuck up. There's no money in the 24th century.
Exactly. It's crazy.
So you've got Captain Kirk, you've got Mr. Spock, and you've got Bones and a few other people. Now, in 2009, a little indie director named J.J. Abrams rebooted Star Trek into a new big
Colin,
flashy movie.
I've got a little newsflash for you. You made that joke already.
Oh, shit.
Shit. Okay. What they basically did was the original series being in the 60s was very kind of campy. It wasn't super high budget. NBC was always cutting down the amount of money they had. But the show made its reputation on being very heady and cerebral and taking these larger societal or science fiction concepts and paring them down into something accessible.
Sure.
And being very socially commentative in a way TV shows weren't allowed to be back then. And a lot of that was because you had a very charming cast of characters, Kirk, Spock, Bones, and others. In 2009, they rebooted these movies. There are now 3 movies, Star Trek Into Darkness, and Star Trek Beyond. And what these movies did was they tried to take this campy, heady thing and make it accessible for modern audiences, especially people who are used to big, flashy things.
Like lens flares.
Lens flares bring everyone in. But the thing that I noticed when watching the commentaries and watching a few other things is essentially, if you look at Star Trek 2009 and how it represents those characters from the 60s, it's almost like they said, what is the most basic, fundamental quality of this person? And let's just reduce them to that.
Wow, that's rough.
What I really like about this as a reimagining is it's able to take something that can be very inaccessible and makes it accessible. Not in a way where fairy tales are something everyone kind of knows and it puts a new story on it, but it's specifically designed to introduce you rather than change your thought on it. And I think it did a really good job of that. Even yesterday, someone at work, he was like, I just watched Star Trek Beyond, and now I'm halfway through the original series. And I'm like, fucking, all right, sweet.
You work with nerds, though.
Said the person hosting an episode of the Common Geeking program.
I was forced to do this. Help. Now, moving on to our final but not most appreciated host.
Representative, don't confuse the terms.
I'll kill you.
You stay in your chair. Do I need to get the handcuffs back?
Chowder.
All right, so... So, like I said before, my domain is The Chronicles of Narnia, written by C.S. Lewis. The Chronicles of Narnia are a series of fantasy novels
about a bunch of dumb people who walk through a fucking wardrobe.
Like, I've had to clean up my closet
idea.
Before, but I don't have a shovel. All right,
here you go.
Nor do you have an army to vanquish.
All right, look, The Chronicles of Narnia are a series of fantasy novels that about this... fantasy land called Narnia, and the books all span the birth and death of this world. Some important reoccurring characters are the kids who go through that wardrobe you guys were talking about. You got Aslan, who's basically
Lion Jesus.
Lion Jesus? He lies to you about everything. Is this water? Yeah, sure, it's water.
Oh, Jesus! You got us again, Jesus.
Classic lion Jesus.
So the Chronicles of Narnia are a reimagining of fairy tales, Greek and Roman mythology, and Christianity. C.S. Lewis has said that he is the most reluctant Christian you'll ever meet. After like time with his bestie J.R.R. Tolkien, he went back to being a Christian. Thing is that he had disagreements with Christianity, and these books were his way of remaking it in a way that he found palatable. And the reason I chose Chronicles of Narnia is because I see a little bit of that in Fables. Like, I see Fables as Bill Willingham making old fairy tales in his image. So, in many interviews, Willingham says that, you know, a lot of these characters and situations are influenced by his political opinion. He doesn't go in with the intention of going, I'm gonna make this super political, but it can kind of sometimes play out that way.
Story of my life.
And, you know, he admits to that, and I think Bill Willingham, you know, is influenced by his political opinions and makes his world that kind of fits that way, even if unintentionally.
All right, now that we've covered everyone's domains briefly, allowed the reps to cover them and explain them as best they can within the timeline.
Reasonably.
Let's move on to discussion. Now, I would actually like to begin the discussion a little bit out of order, and I would like to talk to Colin first.
Hi, Keenan. How are you doing today?
Hi, Colin. It's just me and you.
It's just us.
Just these us. Other ignore the rest.
Yeah, it's just Keenan, Colin, and the rest of the internet.
And me.
Austin, shut the fuck up. Anyway, just me and you.
Ooh, say it softer.
Now, I was wondering, because Star Trek is far more recent than, say, Christianity or the Arthurian legends or the fables depicted in Fables, do you think that somehow lessens the effect of reimagining the characters in Star Trek, which are relatively recent?
I guess it depends on what you mean by the effect. I mean, Star Trek is inextricably a part of American culture.
But what I mean to say is that with the archetypes displayed in folklore, in the King Arthur legends, and in Christianity, these are all really recognizable, even if, like, you don't recognize them consciously.
Yeah.
And so when they're changed, like in Fables, it has a different impact because you're so used to, like, the big bad wolf being the bad guy that it almost is like... So you see what I mean? That changing him into the good guy changes.
Looking back to what I said before, again, part of the reason I wanted to pick this was because it doesn't do quite the same thing that Fables does. It is, the reboot was meant to re-engage old people and introduce new people to a franchise. The other thing is for a fictional franchise, it does have a pretty huge mark. Like, just about everybody knows the name Spock. Even if you don't know what it is, you've heard the name Spock. A lot of people know Live Long and Prosper. The Vulcan salute is an emoji in people's phones. Like, it's just there. So it has become pretty well known. The main thing, I guess, that's different is it's not so much trying to say, like, ooh, this thing that, you know, you just assume is there because it's so ubiquitous, let's fuck with that. No, it was more of saying, like, for those of you who don't know what this is, let us explain it to you. Let us show it to you. But what these new movies really do is they try to pare it down and say, all right, here's a foothold into what this is.
Yeah, I appreciate Captain Kirk's control in Beyond, because, like, if I was in Beyond, I would have shot that bitch, like, 2 seconds after meeting her.
I yield my time to the floor. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome.
Hi.
This is more of an open discussion.
What, is he not good enough for you?
I think we should be able to talk to other people. Your example is a bit different than everyone else's, mainly because it's in the deep lore of a game and isn't exactly in the game. Do you think this...
Yeah, it's not explicit.
Yeah, do you think that this certain level of, I don't want to say unavailability, but more because you have to kind of search through the game to find these, do you think that makes finding out that, oh my god, this is all the Arthurian legends, more interesting, or do you think it kind of makes it like not as impactful because the fact that you have to like search and find it and you don't really get it necessarily?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it could make it more interesting for you if like you hear about it and you're not familiar with Arthurian legend at all, because then you're like, oh, I thought that they actually wrote something on their own, and then you're like, oh, well, they're actually drawing upon a lot of previous literature. So I guess for someone who doesn't know Arthurian legend, it could enrich your experience or just your life, because you might say, oh, I'll look into some of this stuff, some old translations or something. Unless you're like J.R.R. Tolkien and you're like, fuck Arthur because he's not really British. That's some French bullshit. We can talk about that later because that's not really relevant right now. But I think another way to look at it would be if you do know even just a little about the Arthurian legends and stories and stuff. There are, it's not only in like the grimoire cards and the bullshit app.
I know that your father smells like elderberries.
Well, that's basically it, you know.
That's, anyway.
I'm just derailing people way harder than I mean to.
That would have been a good one, actually. That would have been a really good one to do. I should have done that instead. That would have been fun.
They actually do boast having the most accurate Lancelot, Monty Python does, because in the original mythology, Lancelot was like the kind of guy who would just charge in recklessly, like kill everyone, and then be really sorry about it.
And then, like, you know, fuck his best friend's wife.
That's actually exactly how I play Destiny and why my friends hate playing with me.
Yeah. Truth. No, but what I was trying to say, I'm sorry, was that for someone who knows anything about it, it's really easy to see some of the parallels. Like, you do learn about some of the lords and stuff through like interactions with other characters in the games, and you're like, oh, these Iron Lords of old who met at this place Fellwinter Peak, that seems like it's this kind of Camelot for them. It's like where they held council and from which they like sent out all of their knights and stuff to go do chivalrous things and use brute force to stop people from being warlords. But also, like, the main quest line of the expansion involves you trying to subdue these aliens that have found this nanotechnology called SIVA.
Oh, classic. And, I mean, Arthur.
While you're going through this quest line, you learn that the nanotechnology was actually something that the Iron Lords were looking for in their quests. And it was something that was to help them to, like, bring humanity sort of in a great sense back to, like, the Golden Age. Because SIVA technology was apparently designed and originally used by humanity to, like, do whatever they want. It could construct things, and, like, you could program it to do pretty much anything. So
are
it was...
you about to say that SIVA is, like, the Holy Grail?
Yeah.
Oh, my God! Like, oh.
So how much of this is intentionally invoking King Arthur and just...
Well, I hope it's all accidental.
And just these two stories tapping into a collective knowledge.
So I'm not, so despite the ridiculous amount of time I've played Destiny, I am not as steeped in the lore as Austin, because I don't read my phone. But basically, I think that it probably would be intentional. If you look at the rest of the game, all the various enemy classes, they're all named after things from some sort of ancient something or mythology. There's a race called the Cabal, and they're all named after, like, Roman soldiers and Roman people and stuff. The Vex are named after, like, harpies, minotaurs, goblins, mythical creatures, like, you know, little goblins and shit like that. So I think that them trying to invoke these older ideas is totally within what's been set as an expectation for the game.
So, like, aside, like, I think that it is very intentional, especially when you consider, like, the exactitude of some of the parallels. There is an item that like one class in the game can have and use, the Titan artifact called Radagast's Blade. Radagast was the leader of the
Iron Lords.
Yeah, and yeah. It's something that you hold on your character, but there is some like flavor text in it. And it says, so long as this sword was whole, the Iron Banner could not be broken. Like, it was just alluding to, I think, Excalibur and stuff.
That's a space chastity belt if I've ever heard one. All right. I'm going to... Yeah.
Space chastity belt. It was the sword that was broken. Now it's the sword that keeps breaking. Now, I would like to pose an open question to all of you, my friends. Now the thing is about reimaginings is that you don't necessarily lay the groundwork yourself. Now, do you think that fables and perhaps your own domains, perhaps when it comes to reimagining the authors kind of being, I don't want to say lazy, but in a way he's not necessarily doing the work. Do you think it's an easier way to write?
I think it can be a double-edged sword. And fables, I'm not super steeped in the source material, so I can't say for sure. I know when creating new Star Trek movies, there's been a lot of deliberation over, like, all right, what do we include, what do we not? And it's like, I don't think it's so much laziness as it is passion for a thing and wanting to see that thing celebrated again or celebrated or explored in a new way. And I don't think that's laziness. There's definitely something to be said for originality, but and a reimagining can be very original. Fables does not feel like the classics. It feels like someone injected the classics with black tar heroin and tossed everyone in a gutter. Like, in the best possible way.
That is true. You're totally right. I totally feel that Fables really takes characters that you wouldn't expect to become what they are, Like, you wouldn't expect the Big Bad Wolf to be the one trying to stop everyone from killing each other. You wouldn't expect Snow White to be the one in charge. You wouldn't expect Little Boy Blue to be, like, a personal assistant.
And a heck of a blues singer. Like, that I found entertaining, that he's a blues singer.
Well, it's just, it's very, well, there is a thing from a song, Little Boy Blue, Blow Your Horn. So maybe they were taking interest in that, you know.
Yeah, but like, the way you were entertained by Big Wee Wolf, I was entertained by Little Boy Blue.
That's true, very.
Alright, so I think as a jumping off point, building yourself on these previously established stories, it makes it easier because you don't have to consider the logistics of many things, but you can easily fall into a trap. Like, it's very easy when you do these reimaginings that that you just go for the simple thing and don't go beyond that.
You don't trek beyond it at all.
My problem with that Maleficent movie that Disney made was that it took these characters and just went, what if Maleficent was the good guy? What if the royalty was the bad guy?
Oh my, oh. Like the bad guy? Like he's, like they're the ones, the aggressors?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never known a royal family ever to do that ever.
Yeah, and, you know, what, but like, I don't think Fables or the Chronicles of Narnia fall into that trap because Fables, it gives its characters more complexity. Bigby's not just, oh, what if the Big Bad Wolf were a sympathetic good guy? It's, what if the Big Bad Wolf wants redemption?
Yeah, but I think it's really about the writer themselves, because even Star Trek, which, I'm sorry, Colin, but I've always thought was, like, really campy, and whenever I watched the original series, I thought it was over the top and kind of ridiculous.
I said exactly that. You're not hurting anybody.
So when I saw, like, Into Darkness and Captain Kirk being painted as, like, this angsty kind of punk, but also dealing with some larger issues within his own personal, like, sphere, I was like, oh, wow, this is, like, a Kirk that I personally have never seen before, even in, like, the movies where, like, my favorite Star Trek movie is, like, The Voyage Home, so and he's just kind of he's just trying to get these whales, and, like, the plot's kind of ridiculous. So when I saw, when I saw Into Darkness, it was like, oh, shit, the whales got nothing to do with this, man. And he's, like, trying to get revenge, and he's angry, and he's not like, give me those whales, Klingon. But, like, he's like, I need to save the world.
Yeah, so I just want to be the one to say that art is dead. No, but really what I think is that to some extent, whenever somebody embarks on a creative endeavor, especially when we're trying to do narrative, because it's so easy to like fall into these tropes and stuff, that we're always drawing upon stuff that we like to read and write and what our forebears have done in some sense. So I don't think that making something that you consciously consider a reimagining of certain themes or plots or stories or characters is necessarily any worse than saying, I made this on my own, because you just didn't make it on your own. No one exists in a vacuum.
For those of you who don't know, Bigby smokes one type of cigarette, and that is the Huff and Puff, which I makes me laugh a lot. So I would like you all to give me packs of Huff and Puff.
Wait, time is that from like 1 to 5? 21 cigarettes a pack?
It's gonna happen. Okay, I can stop whatever I want.
You're a fucking chain smoker. I'm gonna be quite honest here. I'm gonna give it 4 out of 5 packs of Huff and Puffs because it was a lot better than I expected it to be. Like, you know, I thought that when I was going into it, I was just like, oh, it's just going to be like throwing all of these Fable characters into a like pulp detective thing. But, you know, it was actually pretty funny and clever, and it was nice.
Yeah.
So, looking at this, I had played the prequel game Wolf Among Us, so I was coming in from a bit of a different angle, and I kind of expected it to be like a pared-down, dumbed-down version of the game, because comics don't always go as in-depth. They're always moving very quickly. I'm going to have to give this probably 4.5 out of 5 packs. If Jeff says anything about another half thing, I'm going to punch him, because the fifth pack only has half the cigarettes in it, whatever.
But so, if there are 21 cigarettes in a pack, you need to...
He smoked right. one halfway down and put it back in the pack. So he has 10.5 cigarettes in the last pack. So what is that, like 95.5 cigarettes? I'm going to give Fables 95.5 cigarettes.
So I would give Fables four packs of Huff and Puffs out of 5. I normally dislike these kinds of stories because it's just, what if they were fairy tales, but darker and edgier? But Fables, on the other hand, is a really good story, and the fact that I enjoyed it, I feel is a testament to how well written it was.
Now for the Gold Star student, which we kind of award to whoever has done the best, has related the topic most to their domain, and has actively participated in the conversations. And this time, I'll give you the Vorpal Sword, because it makes an appearance. So I will give the Vorpal Sword to Colin.
Yeah, whatever.
I felt that Colin, one, picked a kind of harder topic just because, frankly, it wasn't as well known in terms of imagery.
I feel like we were at a disadvantage.
I mean, like the archetype thing, which I've already discussed with you. But not just because he happened to choose something harder, but because he also just a bit more about his own topic than everyone else. He was able to readily call upon all the information that he knew about his topic.
Oh, Kalu Kale! Oh, I'm so happy.
Thank you for listening. Again, I'm Keenan Koish, and this week's topic was Fables, in which we discussed reimaginings. You can check it out at Amazon or anywhere you illegally find comics. iTunes finds it. Yeah, you can honestly find it anywhere comics are sold, because it actually won like 14 Eisner Awards. It has so many. But anyway, if you ever like want to like just look it up, I would highly recommend it. Now, Colin is our next host of the next episode.
All right. So in about a week, I'm going to be hosting an episode about Halo, fucking a little bit about how the AI characters play into that game. But Halo 4, really good game if you haven't played it. You can play Halo 5. Next episode is also going to have something unique where we're actually, out of the 8 of us, we're going to bring in a guest. I have a friend of mine who's going to join us who is not a normal cast member. So it's going to shake things up a bit. Cool.
And this will be... And you read up on it, or at least play the game, before it airs on...
March 10th.
Yeah. If any of you listening want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Geeking Program, or email us at commongeekingprogram@gmail.com. If you're listening on iTunes, leave a review, please. If you want to know more, go to commongeekingprogram.com, which is spelled exactly as it sounds in English.
This episode of the Common Geeking Program was hosted by Keenan Kodish, joined by Taimul Chaudhary, Colin Ketchin, and me, Austin Liebers. This episode was sponsored by space, magic, and other incomprehensible bullshit. This podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levitt. This episode was edited by me, Austin, and features original music by Colin Ketchin. If you liked it, leave us a review on iTunes and check out commongeekingprogram.com to learn more. We hope you tune in on Friday, March 10th, to listen to Colin wax lyrical on his one true love, Halo. Thank you for listening to this.
I hope I heard that. I hope that comes through on the audio.
Okay.
Hello. Welcome to the Common Geeking Program, a book club or cup.
The Common Farting Program. All right.
Jesus Christ.